Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining me today. Before we bring on our guest, I want to share a little bit about her, Jessica Taylor. We're going to be talking to her about her wonderful book, From Tragedy to Triumph. And so I want to share a little bit with you all about Jessica, and then we're going to bring her on. Let me get here right here. technical issues going on. Jessica Elizabeth Taylor is the daughter of the late Gordie Taylor, a Scottish actor and musician. She was also a professional actress and an award-winning Irish dancer during her childhood years. Born in Listowel, County Kerry, Ireland, she owned and operated a Merle Norman cosmetic studio in Toronto until her tragic head injury accident in 1969. Although it took many years for her to recover from this devastating experience, the miracles that came forth from this event led her to personally create a foundation called New Beginnings, and also endlessly campaign to bring greater awareness to the plight of head and brain injured people. She currently lives in Vancouver Island and is affiliated with the many head injury support groups around the world. She has received extensive radio, print, and TV coverage, and in addition, has attracted a large support from many high notable profiles like Vanessa Redgrave, the Duchess of York, and former President of Ireland, Mary Robinson. Recently, Jessica was honored as a hidden hero on the Shaw TV show for her tireless crusade for head and brain injury awareness. Harpo producer Jack Levine and his assistant, Tricia Nyman, stated they were excited about her book and campaign work. I met Jessica on Facebook last year around the same time, and upon reading her personal story, I felt compelled to arrange a conversation with her about her miraculous triumph from experiencing such a profound head injury, but also about the light that she is in the planet. Her story is both unique and universal in the percentages of how others are experiencing full recovery. And also, she's going to share a little bit about the medical and personal support that are nowhere near enough to compensate for what brain injured, head injured people have to do in terms of coming to create a brand new life from scratch. So Jessica and I are going to briefly touch on some of those points in our conversation. And without further ado, let's bring on our honored guest this week. Jessica, are you there?
Hi, Valerie. Yes, can you hear me right?
Yes, I can. Welcome, welcome.
I've got the phone on speaker, and I'm not used to using it, to be honest. So I'm not too loud.
I think you're perfect. It'll come across awesome. So. I'm so happy we finally got to do this. I've been thinking about we've been going back and forth chatting on this for about a year now.
I know. Yeah, everything in its own time, right?
Yes.
Thank you for the lovely things you said about my book and in your email to me. Thank you so much. It was, you know, that this remarks like this and from friends and the friends on Facebook as well, they just keep me going because I work alone. It's magic. Thank you. I have to thank you for that.
Well, I want to tell you, when I read the book, it was extraordinary. You know, some of the things that some of the healing in my life that has come forth, I was telling my sister, you know, we experienced a lot of triumph over some things, but to have to come back from almost like complete scratch. And not only that, but to lose so much parts of our personality, there was nowhere near some of the things that we, you know, endured or came back to have to come back. It's almost like you've lost yourself and then you found yourself, but the whole world around you, inside and out, changed and kind of flipped upside down. So, you know, I wanted to share a little bit about, you know, some of those topics and moving forward because it's such a jam-packed show today. Can you share and touch basis about the pre-accident? You know, to give people that opportunity to kind of know, I want to share the pre and post-accident, but I really want our audience and our listeners to understand the difference, the night and day difference. So can you touch a little bit about your pre-accident experiences?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I guess childhood in Ireland we can start with. I can go in terms of how I have written the book, starting out my childhood in Ireland as a child actress with my late father, Gordie Taylor, who is an actor and played trumpet with such people as Sir Harry Lauder and Flora Ford in Scotland. I guess it was, though it was difficult for my mother after my father passed away, it financially was difficult for her. And then I was sent to boarding school, which helped my mother. The Protestant Orphan Society helped out in that. Boarding school, I suppose, gave me, even though one is rather lonely at boarding school, you can't run to the fridge and help yourself to, you know, treats and things, but it gives one a sense of independence, I believe. And as you know, at the school, a beautiful artist, elderly lady at the time, actually, she gave me a life reading, and it was just so astonishing that I wrote it in the book. It unfolds throughout the entire story. One can see everything that she predicted, all the different predictions, even to the fall down the stairs, you know.
Wow.
It was amazing, absolutely amazing. But it unfolds throughout the book, and one can see that woman was 100% accurate with my whole life story. But then I went on to nursing and nursed three of the royal family, actually, the Queen's three first cousins. And they were all special needs girls. And met Ken, Englishman, Ken, in the Navy. And we married. And in 1967, we emigrated to Canada. And that's when I opened my Merle Norman Cosmetics Studio in Bramley. And life was just great for the first 3 months. And then, first 3 months. And Ken had a good job as well. So everything was hunky-dory until I was accompanied by a sales representative. I was buying supplies from him, and I had just started three staff, train them, et cetera, take over so I could have a break because my hours were like from 10 until 10, Monday to Saturday. And in those days, I don't know if you can today, but you can't leave your studio because your shop, you get fined, you know, if you leave to go and get something to eat. So
I was in
all day long and all day and night. But I had a nanny for my children, and that helped, and they would come into the shop on weekends. And I loved Mummy's shop and all the little cosmetics and everything else. But then when I accompanied this sales representative to get out of there, really, was partly to get out and partly to have a look at some boutique items that he had to bring back to the studio. We entered a part of a premises that I was unaware of. I had not been there before. And he just opened this door. Funny, I can remember it as a green door. Oh, it was a
sweet wow. So that stuck with you, yeah.
Tom Jones and I met him actually years later and told him about that. But yeah, I remember that, but I don't remember the actual accident. You know, the brain, as you know, will switch off so that you never forget such trauma. But he opened the door. It was sheer blackness. I thought I was on ground level, but I wasn't. I put one leg out, obviously, one foot out, and just went head first down 15 stairs, my head striking against a steel-plated door. So that was the beginning of my new life. Put it that way.
Oh, wow. Well, I wanted to share, you know, a little bit about on page 38 because I thought it was tremendous, you know, as we move towards this in the book, From Tragedy to Triumph. It is at Amazon, by the way. And I think I have a link that we have on the blog talk. But this is a little bit on page 38. I don't recall the precise moment when I regained consciousness. I do know that I became aware of deep discomfort, of something that went far beyond the physical pain in my head, the deep throbbing headache that was my constant companion for many weeks. What I felt was something so strange and unknown that it terrified me. There was a strange feeling of dislocation and isolation, of being outside. But outside of what? Everything and everyone was alien to me. Try for a moment to imagine my situation. I was out of intensive care and in a ward of 6 to 8 people. Of course, I wasn't aware of this. I was cocooned in a little world of my own. The curtains around me create a protective screen between myself and the noisy but unknown world outside. Those curtains seem to offer me the same protective comfort as a mother's womb offers her unborn baby. I was aware vaguely of other things in my world, of people moving in and out. I'm not sure I actually thought of them in human terms, but rather as disturbances, the cause of comfort or discomfort, the source of sounds and alarming visual images, none of which made any kind of sense at that very early stage. The one overriding impression that emerges from all this confusion was what I later realized to be the sound of the curtain as it was pulled back and forth. As the light had been soft and welcoming, this noise was loud and searing, causing the most unbearable sensations in my mind. It was as though those harsh sound noise became physical, as if the coarse grating edges of the rattling curtain rings actually abraded my mind. Wow, that was just so visual that you gave, like those, your other senses just were so acute in the midst of your mind being so confused.
Yeah, that, believe me, it took a lot of years to get that written down. I started writing in early 80s, would you believe?
Oh, bless your heart.
Finally edited, finalized in 1991. Excuse my throat. I seem to have maybe a little cold starting here.
Well, you're welcome to have a nice little glass of water, have a sip of water if you've got a little sip, because we're just going to go with the flow, Jessica. So, like I said, it was just amazing because I couldn't imagine feeling like an alien in my own body, and I couldn't imagine having such relapse. Like, you know, you couldn't even connect to a simple thing like, what's a curtain? What's that noise? There was like no memories of you being able to connect. And that was what was, you know, there was a part of me that I couldn't logically connect to that because I've never experienced that. But then the bigger picture of that was, wow, how helpless that must feel, how out of sorts and hopeless that must feel. And so I just wanted to share, you know, that here you were, you had a normal life, you just got, you know, you got married in 1960, you had two beautiful children, you were just beginning on the brink of this, you know, cosmetic studio. I mean, you were really right on, and all the accolades that you had during childhood, and then all of a sudden, it was just in a flash, it just vanished. And here you are starting over almost like a little baby. So can you share a little bit about, you know, what happened in that experience post-hospital, a little additional? I think the white light vision and some of that reading at the hospital.
Yes. Going to the light, of course, I didn't know what it was at the time. It was just a memory later that I had. But it was definitely, I believe it was a near-death experience. This is, this is what came from friends who went to visit me at the hospital and what the staff said to them, you know, that I was near death. And the fear of elderly, that's another thing that amazed me, you know, again, later on when I was able to reflect and look back at all of these things that went on. The fear of elderly people, and this was a confusion to me, and to be honest, still is to a certain extent, because when I was nursing, when I, you know, in my 20s, before I met my husband, before I met Ken, I just loved, I loved working with the senior citizens. That was my favorite ward to work in. And yet here I am now and petrified of anybody that looked elderly, put it that way. And it even continued out of the hospital. I'd be, you know, somebody would be driving me down a street and I'd look at elderly people walking on the pavement or in another car or something, and I'm still scared. Nobody's ever been able to touch base on that. I think there's, you know, I'm trying to analyze it, but without getting too deep into the subject matter. But I think because, again, I was a baby again, I believe. You know, that fetal position that,
yes,
that I put on the cover of the book, the artist, but the girl in the fetal position out in the cosmos. I slept like that for years. I wanted to be back in the womb, put it that way. And I think that maybe all babies are scared, you know, newborn babies, maybe.
Yeah, it would be almost like, well,
life out of the poor things, you know.
Well, I think I've seen that. I think it's like we look like huge monsters to them sometimes because they're so little, you know, the visual of that. And they were unfamiliar to you. You know,
yeah.
There was like no memory of them. And so your first visual with no memory, I'm sure, it just looked probably a little distorted, you know, coming out of that. And without understanding, there was no, like, you couldn't connect the dots. Like, oh, okay, this is a phase in humans'
yeah.
lives. That could be very jarring.
In the mirror, Valerie, when I saw myself in that mirror.
Yeah, share a little bit about that, because I wanted to also say, you know, that was probably something that should have never happened, and I was thinking about
yeah.
that disturbance.
Well, this is not to knock the medical profession. I mean, nurses, I adore them for what they do, and I worked with them, and I know what laborious work that is. But I was left in the bathroom on my own for quite a long time, apparently, and I just stood there, of course, because my right eye was like hanging out of its socket because there was a retrovulvar hemorrhage behind it. I went to the bathroom and saw two of myself, you know, one up and one down, and two faces in the mirror. And that in itself was a tremendous shock, you know, to say, who am I? And I see this person in the mirror. This it was really, really frightening. I can remember it to this day, and it's 40-something years ago. Yeah, and of course, Kenny Holiday wrote that beautiful song.
Yeah, we're going to play in a few minutes, but, you know, one of the things also you shared was it was not just a fear of elderly. It was not just that sight of, you know, you didn't even recognize yourself, and here you are still recovering because I'm, you know, it was very early in that accident. But there was, you know, a fear of houses and being alone and not understanding that. There was that fear of, you know, what was in the what was in your closet. You didn't even understand the connection to clothing in your book.
And, you know, I can remember that one scene like it was yesterday, staring in the closet. And I don't think I'll be able to, even in the book, I don't think I could express enough to people. It's so hard for anybody to understand the emotion and the feeling. Like, I'm touching the clothes, and some of them would have been my children's, going from closet to closet, to children's room, to my room, Ken's room. And it was like, I know what they are. I should know. I should know what they are, but I don't. That's the only way I can. I don't know if that covers it enough.
No, I mean, I totally get. I mean, I couldn't get that, but
yeah.
that had to have been pretty terrifying because you couldn't connect the dots, you know.
Yeah.
And there was you know, even though you're trying hard to connect the dots, that probably overwhelmed you. And I know that you had shared also that, you know, it was probably a long onset of depression over the fact that you could not connect the dots.
And what was very sad too was that Ken and I were just new immigrants, and because we opened the studio in Bramalea, we needed to move to a house close to the studio. So we were just renting a house and didn't know any neighbors. So it, there was no help, you know. Ken had to go into the studio and take care of it and leave his job, actually. Lost a lot of finances through that. There I was, left alone in the house, bum-bumping down the stairs because I didn't know how to walk by myself, or was petrified. For years I was scared of steps, by the way, you know. Then I see snow outside. It's November, in December, and I see snow. I didn't know what it was, you know, and I'm curled up in a fetal position in front of the window. That's when the depression really, really set in. I still remember that, believe me. All those years ago, I still remember that. But then I was sent to California because I had cousins in California, and Ken, bless his heart, you know, one of the kindest people on this planet, by the way, my ex-husband, Ken. He sent me off to California to be with some distant cousins that I had never met before, and they had a beautiful, luxurious house, swimming pool and everything else, and there some comedy came into the story. I was so
I want to share that. I want to, like, we're going to put some of that little twist. Let's play Kenny's song because I think it was beautiful. Feel the way that I do. We'll play that, and then we'll come on to that California, because really there's, you know, Jessica goes into description in her book about her, even her relationship, how altered it became with Ken, and, you know, how it affected both of them. But let's go ahead and put this song on, Jessica, and then we'll come back, and I want you to share that little incident. Is that cool?
Okay, cool.
Awesome. Okay.
I love
Here's,
that song. Anyway.
Yeah, it is a beautiful song, and thank you, Kenny Holiday. We want to give a shout-out to you, and we'll also have his link in post-show notes. Here we go.
Sorry.
Feel the way I do.
Reading the book.
Yes. That's such a beautiful song, Jessica. You can find Kenny Holiday at kennyholiday.com. He is a tribute. He sings tributes to Rod Stewart and John Bon Jovi. So thank you so much, Kenny, for sharing that, because that was a beautiful song.
And people can hear it on the homepage of my website.
Yes,
we put
yes.
It there.
Yes, that's jessicaetaylor.org.
Yeah. But to get back to California and the kind of comical things that happened, sad but comical, you know that I was so scared of houses. I was petrified of houses. And that, too, lasted for quite a few years, just petrified of living in a house. Totally claustrophobic in them. And so these cousins, they decided that they would, you know, I was only capable really of just being looked after at that time. And they would sit me on a chaise lounge out by the swimming pool. But I refused to look at the house. I would not look at the house. And of course, the scene at the bottom of the end of the garden was just like a brick wall and some, I don't know, some a lemon tree or something. It wasn't anywhere near as fascinating as the house. Beautiful white brick house and plants all around it and everything. And so they used to come out and switch the chair, you see, when I'd get up and walk around so that I'd have to face the house. And then I went hysterical, absolutely hysterical. I could not sit. You know,
oh,
I found
wow.
Actually, to you know, when I look back on those things, but it was not comical to me at the time, and that's when a depression really, really set in even more. I just started envisioning horrible images, which are all in the book. Too many to go into now.
Yeah, yeah, there is a ton of things that you share, and
yeah.
You know, I recommend checking that out because I think that part of it going into you had some of the devastating things about being afraid of that, but also there was a flip side that I want you to share a little bit about too, that the miracles and blessings that came in about some of the spiritual, you know, experiences that you had at
yeah.
the same time. So I would love for you to share a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, that was my growing stage, you know. That was my growing stage until, like, I suppose almost a year later, when I went to the UK, because I was not able to function in the house, I had to, you know, again, I wanted to go to my mother to get some help. So when I went to the UK, I took my two children with me and just left Ken, just left him, right. My feelings had diminished anyway. I just totally confused. I didn't know him. You know, I was a new person. I do believe that there was an altered frequency in vibration. You know, I believe that the human, I have a theory about it, which I'm writing in my current thesis now, that when somebody's hit on the head like that, that there's some alteration of vibration of your frequency, and that's how you get lost and you know, change personalities and that. But that's another story.
Yeah. We're going to keep posted on that.
when I went to the UK to get help from my mother, of course, then, unfortunately, my stepfather didn't want me there, so my mother found a house for me to rent, and Ken again sent the funds for renting. And there I met some beautiful people, spiritual people, like John Hendricks of Lambert Hendricks and Ross, and people... jazz people at Ronnie Scott's Jazz Club. Somebody said, actually, it was Billy Miller, who was once Frank Sinatra's pianist. He said, why don't you go to Ronnie Scott's Jazz Club where you will relate to the blues, right?
Wow.
And which I did, and then I started mixing with these people. But I saw Judy Hendrix, John's wife, on stage, and I've put a photograph of her and my mother in the book. Because all of a sudden I got, no, this wasn't my first memory, sorry. I'd have to flash back to what my first memory was in California. My first memory was in California, I'll flash back to that. But when I looked at Judy and I saw the resemblance to my mother, I suddenly remembered our life together, bits and pieces of our life together in show business. just looking at Judy. The first memory to flash back was when my cousins took me to Universal Studios and I saw the stuntmen falling. You know, of course, there was a fear seeing them falling, but just going around the Universal Studios and seeing people perform in that, that was my very first memory of my childhood. That came back. To skip to that, the jazz people, John and literally became a father figure, and Judy, my mother, and their daughters, and Judy's just 1 year older than me, you know. I think that helped me a great deal, but my children had to be sent back to their father. And as Debbie had become a mother figure to me in that house that we were renting, when she had, there's too long a story there, fires and everything in the house, Debbie had to literally take over and become a mother figure. I realized that she had been my mother in a previous incarnation, and that's why it was so easy for her to do that. But the children I could not look after the children properly, and that's one of the petitions I have. For God's sake, don't let a head-injured woman look after her children alone. It just should not happen. And so they had to be sent back to their father in Canada. This was devastating for both of them. Dreadful, and especially for Debbie, that she had been a mother figure to me, and all of a sudden, you know, her daughter is taken away from her. So you can just imagine, you know, what happened there.
But well, they were very young, too. I mean, you know, what you guys can, everyone listening can read in the book, but they were very, very young kids, and they switched roles with you. And one of the things that Dr. Kelly shared was that you had post-traumatic amnesia. You returned to the world when you were a stranger. You had retrograde amnesia, had no recollection of any events leading up to the accident. You didn't know your name, didn't know your children, didn't know your husband. It was like sheer terror. You know, it was like all these sounds. So there was all these pieces of your children knowing you, your husband knowing you, and you were literally strangers. And the effects of both of, you know, not only on them, but on you, and then to be separated was absolutely horrendous, I'm sure, you know.
I was separated for a year, and then I just couldn't take any more, you know, the separation. It was killing me. And I had actually met a Scotland Yard detective, and how I met him was somebody I had met and who was looking after me, you could say, and helping me. Sarah Kelly, whom I called my earth angel in the book. She had a pub in London, and I mean, I was prancing around London, you know, like a teenager, getting lost, losing handbags, losing coats, you name it. This all happens when you're left on your own, you know, after a head injury. But amazing things happened. When I was at this pub, and I met Sarah Kelly. Unfortunately, it was the time of the IRA bombs in London. Of course, we actually survived an IRA bomb in her pub one night.
Oh, wow. That was powerful in the book.
But then the Scotland Yard detective that was on call at the time, he befriended me, and he got me back to Canada. And believe it, I had no passport, but because he was a Scotland Yard detective, it worked. And Ken, of course, was waiting at the other end for me, you know, in Toronto, and was able to produce the passport with both of us on it. So it worked. But I had a ton of sleeping pills. I had a ton of sleeping pills with me. I'd saved them up because, you know, I was very suicidal. But I did sleep with those under my pillow. And again, I let people read the book to see the comedy that I devised to keep myself going.
you had to deal with addictions. I mean, because you were, you know, that's another problem that, you know, that happens, is that you were being medicated, and you didn't, oh my gosh, it's like going backwards.
Yeah, for many, many years. But, you know, they found the tablets at the airport. The officials found the tablets. So then there was this big scene I'm pulled into this little room, you know, and, you know, there I am still ill from the head injury. And I'm pulled into the them, and why have you got these tablets? What are you doing with it? Well, I can't really say, well, I'm keeping them because I want to take my life someday, you know. So, but anyway, they let me keep them. They let me keep them.
And, oh, bless your heart.
You know, great reunion, because I was not, again, fit to mother my children, even at that stage, you know, even at that stage of Ken got me an apartment. And I mean, Ken, it was a dreadful experience for Ken, too. He didn't know this woman, you know. He told my cousins he didn't know who I was. And so he knew I wanted to live separately, and which I did. And you know, he got an apartment for the children and myself. And but we've,
well,
you know,
I know
we've been friends all the years. We've never been turned against each other. He's helped me out over and over again. And we live near each other now. You know, he comes up here on weekends now and again and helps me out in the garden and things like that, you know. So we have a great friendship today, so thank goodness for that. But, yeah.
Well, what a, you know, we are, we, you know, you and I have had conversations about souls, you know, pre-birth choosing things. And, you know, Jessica, I want to touch about a couple bases because we're rounding up close to the wrap-up. But one of the things that... was how brave your soul was prior to coming in. You know, there was exit, you know, I've heard exit points, but how brave your soul was to endure that, how brave your, all the souls of those, your loved ones, to connect. Because of where you are now, and it took 16 years from what you were sharing to kind of like start over again, from a baby to toddler to teenage to, you know, brand new normal, not even, you know, like recollecting, but having to start a lot of it is like a brand new person in the same body. And so, you know, and your, and not only your family, but everybody that was affected about that over and over. And the ignorance that happens because there wasn't a lot of research, although you've done tremendous research on your site. The JessicaEtaylor.org. You've done tremendous, you know, links, and I'm going to have some post-show notes at my Tweaking Your Vibrations, but you've done tremendous work in the campaign, which is why I'm so passionately supporting you about helping bring awareness to, you know, what is still going on for millions in your statistics. But you know, share about that, because it's powerful that, you know, this is still such a big problem in the 21st century.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I have to bring world attention to the plight of the head and brain injured, because I call them the forgotten people of today. They literally are the forgotten people. You know, you might think that through time, since my injury, that things are better. I mean, there wasn't even a CAT scan, would you believe, in the hospital where I was, that things have improved to a certain degree. But I have letters, and I still have them, because, as you know, I went back to Ireland when my children were older and you know, getting married and boyfriends and everything else. And when I was there, and I wrote the first little book, The Journey Back, and as a result, masses of head-injured families contacted me. Like, one time I was on the phone for about 3 months, and they were all turning to me for help. And this is happening again now today here in Canada. So, you know, why should head-injured people have to turn to another head-injured person, you know, even though recovered to a certain extent? Something is very wrong. Something is very wrong. I mean, brain-related illness costs $1.3 trillion in the U.S. annually. Is one, what is it? I think it's 1.5 million every year are head injured in America. There's a million a year in England and Ireland, 10,000 people. In Queensland, 11,000 people are expected this year alone. New Zealand, 30,000 people. Here in British Columbia alone, 14,000 people a year. I mean, the statistics around the rest of the world are just as devastating, you know. And we have the opposition health critic, Adrian Dix, in British Columbia. He said that there's a lack of rehabilitation for head and brain injured survivors, and it's a serious national problem. He said that this year, you know. So, you know, there's children with concussion as well, and I think there's 360 children on bicycles head injured cycling in America every year. It's just devastating. It's devastating. We need an awful lot of help is required, really do. Things have got to be changed in the hospitals. It's got to be a big change.
Well, you bring awareness to the links. You know, you have alternative links, and you have some case studies and new methods and all sorts of links on your page.
Yeah.
And you know, to everyone listening, Jessica is also on Facebook. She has been approached to turn her book into a movie, and I think that just her story is like one light of an amazing journey that so many people can relate to. Jessica, I think that's why people are drawn to you like a moth to a flame, because you understand. You understand what they've endured and experienced, and you've had just, you know, in the book you share a couple personal testimonies of when you went back to Ireland and you were connecting to people, and how amazing just that love and that and that relatability and that understanding brought light into their life and created transformation for them.
Valerie, thank God, saved three lives, but I want to save a lot more because, you know, depression is so prevalent. It really is. Too many. You can understand why would anybody get depressed? Of course you would, you know. Of course you would, you know, this.
Well, you're trying to relearn your body, and then you're trying to relearn your language, and then you're trying. I mean, it's like who would leave a baby in the middle of a street, unprotected? But that's exactly what happens. That's exactly like some of the things that you experience. It's like you were turned loose in the middle of a 5 o'clock traffic,
yes.
and you were a stranger to this world,
yes.
And you were a baby.
Yes. Yes.
You know, that visual is what picked up. And yet there was a part of you, soul-wise, and the whole amount. But as a physical being, as a human being, you know, everything that you had learned up until that point in 1969, everything was just, it was, you know, it's a profound story, Jessica, because you endured it, because you didn't cross over. You know, it would have been understandable if you would have taken a whole bunch of pills.
Not my self-love, but Ken and my daughters as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I am just so blessed that they have come out just great people from this, you know. They didn't have the complete transformation that I did in terms of when I, again, jumping when I went to live in the Isle of Wight, when my children were older in that. I was, as you know, I was getting all over the world trying to find who I am. Who am I? Where am I? Even tried going back to Ireland to see, will I start out in Ireland, you know. When I was in the Isle of Wight, a beautiful place, I met such fabulous spiritual people there. And that taught me, and I went to the library and did research, and on the instruction of one of the people who said, I wasn't able to afford to heat my little apartment and bedsit. And he said, go to the library and you know, do some studying. And actually, that was the biggest transition, I think, for me. And that was, what, 19, I would have been in the 80s, 85, something like that.
Wow.
But when I went to the library, I books just fell out. And they were Vatican literature, would you believe? And this is what made me then. From that point on, I did research for 14 years, not knowing at the time that while I was researching theology and its connection with the paranormal and all therein, that I was stimulating dormant neurons. And because we humans have 90% dormant neurons, and what are they there for? They've got to be there for a reason. And there are actually people that, again, on my website, the websites are there of the organizations that heal people from head injury through utilizing those brain cells, tapping into those, and the plasticity. so that those dormant neurons take over from the dead cells, the dead and injured cells. And I didn't know through doing all this research this was happening to me, you know, until I was at a lecture at one time. Eugene Campbell, one of the people that conducts this program in France, state-supported, by the way, in France. Nowhere else is it state-supported. Then I think through that transition, then poetry started coming to me, discarnate spirit started coming to me. I had a third eye vision that actually scared the life out of me, but at the same token, it was just an amazing thing happening. A lot of the paranormal happened to me there after discovering this. So there was a big transition in terms of my spiritual development. You know, little hints had been coming to me through the years. You know how you're guided to the right people, quite obviously, you know. And I had met various people from time to time. As I said, the first one was John Hendricks, who quoted, you know, spiritual quotes to me and that. And I learned from these people, and then this all led to a complete transformation of Jessica, you could say, in this spiritual, you know, with it's hard to describe, actually. It's complete transition. It's like going on another dimension. And I wonder, did I go on that other dimension right from the day I fell and hit my head? I don't know what you think about that, Valerie.
I resonated with that, and I would love to explore that a little bit more, you know, for people, because there's a sense of hope, because the dimensions are thinning, but there's so much unexplored about the mind and the brain, and what you said about the neuron synapses. You know, when we learn some new things, and we do change brain patterns, and there's so much unexplored territory. But, you know, in wrapping up, oh my gosh, this is so rich, we could go on, and I just want to honor your time. But what do you want to share with the listeners? What are a few things, because you've reconnected to people that you loved in the past. There's a new love in your life that you were connected, that you actually found and connected on Facebook. But what would you like to share, you know, in our wrap up about some of the important things that you're working on now? Because I think that really it matters, and I really want to support you in that as well.
Yeah, I just had to flash back on something, because you mentioned something about a film. No, there were people, I did meet some people years ago in England that were interested, but long story short, I my lawyer got me out of this. So I think, you know, that's past tense, but people do see the potential of a film, of the story. I guess as a child actress, the show business is still in my blood, and I do see it myself. But I wanted to just tap back on that. And also, when you mentioned that a new love in my life, but no, I live on my own, and I'm very happy in my own space, like a lot of my girlfriends are, actually, very independent. But I love the fact that the man that I did fall in love with in my teen years in Toronto, I hadn't seen him. I just left him to go find myself in Ireland. I just left him. I'd been living with him for about a year, I think. A wonderful man, just helped me through. Again, you're led to the right people to help you. Very intelligent, highly intelligent man. Made me feel so good that this man, you know, cared about me at all. And I went off to Ireland and left him. And so for 30 years, we had no idea I had no idea where he was, and he had no idea where I was, and he found me on Facebook late last year. So he has come back into my life as a friend. And
as a friend, great. I was thinking about old love, new friend.
I have to put all my energy into my work. And when one takes on a relationship, you know, a love relationship, a deep love relationship with a man, that takes up, as you know, an awful lot of energy. And I can't get into that space. I just cannot. So that's why I'm so happy that both Paul and Ken, the two men that I just left, you know, up and left, are my two best friends now. Just wonderful. They both visit me, and, you know, I'm so happy with this. But in terms of what I want for people to know about, well, again, they would have to read my website. There's an awful lot for me to remember, and I still have recall, you know, problems that way. Once head injured, unfortunately, we're head injured for life. There are certain things that, like, I would have to have 8 hours sleep every night. I cannot take on stress. I cannot take on too much work, too many projects at a time. I have to watch myself at all times that way. And that's why with my book now, self-publishing my book, it needs to get into the hands of a conventional publisher so that it can get into shops. I can't cope with that myself. So I've actually made a proposal to an organization in California to merge with me and take a percentage of my book to help me. Because I'm 72 in July, so I'm 72 years young, right, as Oprah says. Age is only a number. But at the same token, it is a lot for me to do. So that needs to be done before anything else. That needs to be done now, soon. And I'm hoping these people will merge with me, and that will help me out a great deal. But the things that I am emphatic about is the constant use of the terminologies brain damage and vegetable. Instead of vegetable, all people, what happens to people is they are lacking in oxygen. And there is a word, inoxiated, you know, I mean, that can be used instead of using calling people a vegetable. And brain damage is demeaning and antiquated. I loathe this, and I, in my book, as you know, I've appealed, and on my website, to everyone, to the media, to doctors, to medical people, to scientists, I don't care who they are, to please stop using this word damage. You don't damage your, you don't say I damage my arm and I damage my hand and I damage my leg. You know, you damage your car. So why use that despicable word for a brain injury? And this has led to stigma. So I'm hoping that one day I will win that fight and stop that, you know, the use of those awful words. That means an awful lot to me.
I can totally understand that.
Yes, to everyone who's had a head injury. Yeah. But I want people to know, too, and as you know from reading the book, there's a lot of comedy in this story. It's not just all tragedy. You know, there's a lot of comedy. Yeah, there is. And, you know, there's a lot of comedy. A lot of comical things happened as well. And I can't remember the whole story. It's just no way. Sometimes I'm talking to friends and they say, can you, you know, you talk about one aspect of the book. And I say, I don't know. I have to go back and read the book.
Well, you know, it's like, you know, hey, people that have not experienced some of the things that you've extant, I find I have to go and read things, you know. It's only so much we can put in our head now because information is flooding us, and so that's understandable. But you're right about the humor. I'm glad that you brought that up and about where you are right now currently. Thanks for the clarity about, you know, your relationships, because it does. You know, there's just such grace. There's such grace, Jessica, about what you went through. There's such grace and compassion and love, all enfolded into the story, this tremendous transformation. And the years that I went through, there's just such, it's bigger than you. Yeah, it's like it became bigger than you as you started, you know, coming back and finding yourself. It grew bigger than you. And I think that's what excited me about us connecting, because it's bigger than you. It's like it took a life of its own, not just a personal, but it's like you said, it's international, it's universal. And I can't get enough, I can't tell you enough that how honored I am that we finally got a chance to connect. And you're such a light. I so appreciate your endurance and your persistence, your courage. That is huge. I've known people that have endured lesser things. This could not stand those things, but your courage, the reconnection to your family, the courage and the persistence. It's such a you have grandchildren now. It's such a blessing.
It was wonderful to just be back in Canada with, in Vancouver Island where my daughters are. And as you know, I nursed my mother and my two brothers. I wrote about that in the book. And they all passed away. I was capable of doing that, but there was no family left in Ireland. So back I came to Canada and to my daughters who are here on the island. So this is magic. And Ken, we're all together here. It's just wonderful. It's a lovely ending to the story, put it that way, and to find old friends. And of course, carrying on, it's not ended. Here I am writing my thesis, Jewels in the Mud, 14 years research in theology and its connection with the paranormal. And I've got to do that. I've got to finish that. And I've got to keep my campaign going. I've got to keep this going as well. I feel like I'm at war.
Well, at times I can feel like that because it's like slow moving, changing. I'm hoping that this blog talk can be an additional support system because it's recorded. Thank you, Blog Talk community, for archiving these. But just to be able to put that awareness out and to hear you now, in your present moment and the recovery and to give hope. Just, there's other people and other different brain injuries like strokes and some of the other things like dementias and stuff. It's a process, but there is hope. That's the beautiful thing about you, your testimony. Now there is hope. Don't lose hope. In that sense,
I'm going to win this. I'm going to win this.
And I believe you already. Not only have you won this, but you've opened the doors. Yeah.
Yeah. I keep interrupting, but I know you read the quotes from the Harpo people. That came from a friend of mine who had been writing to Oprah for God knows how long about me. And they were all excited about the story and all excited. They told her, et cetera. And then we heard nothing since. So I don't know if that's off. But I would love to go on her new show next year, OWN. Oprah.
Yes. I think that, she's exploring, from her soul radios and stuff, I think she wants to go into the connections from... I think you would be fantastic and you would be a definite blessing, not only for her to get to know you, but just your passion. I mean, you really have brought so much hope to people's lives and changed them.
Yeah, that's a platform, Valerie, that's required for something like this. You have to get out. It has to make news media. It has to get around the world. In one little corner of the world, it's not going to work. Do you know what I'm saying? It has to go big. It has to go big. Yeah, and once it goes big, then you'll find that the system will start owning up and saying, oh, well, let's do something. We better have a brain injury educational program in schools and, financial support for people. There's one man writing to me today from needs to go to live in Vancouver, and the money he has, I don't know, nearly killed when he was out in the street. There's homeless people in all over the world who have had head injuries. It is a huge issue. It's a huge issue.
So we're going to be doing our heart-to-heart together. We're going to put it out there, and we're going to just magnetize.
Yeah. Get Kenny to write another song. She will win.
Yes, that's right. She will win the hearts of many people, and just like you've won mine. You've won my heart, Jessica, and I'm so appreciating you. You're a light, and... you're a light for many, and you're a light in life. I'm so inspired by you. You are 72 years young. You are very young in spirit. So, I'm honored to meet you in this lifetime. So thank you so much for this. Anyone that's listening, you can, again, go to Amazon.com from Tragedy to Triumph by Jessica E. Taylor. She has tons of links for alternative cares and campaigns on her site. That's Jessica, JessicaTaylor.org. I'm going to have post show notes on my Tweaking Your Vibrations. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you. Lots of love to you, Jessica, for for honoring me and everyone listening with your energy.
And I do need book sales, by the way, because I work alone. I work all by myself, and that's the only thing that helps me finance my campaign.
Well, that's one of the things. Another reason why I wanted to really put this out there, because it's worth. Not only is the story true and it's worth telling, but you know, the more that everyone can help support this ongoing, the more that you'll be able to, you know, be able to help spread the word too. So we'll definitely continue supporting that in all sorts of places. But thank you so much, Jessica. And I know we'll continue. She's on Facebook. So you can find her on Facebook, and till next time, you know, maybe as your thesis goes, so we can come back together and talk about some of that paranormal. I think that would be fantastic.
I'll have that complete. I've got 13 or 14 chapters written, but it's all typed. Again, flashing back to my time in Ireland, I was typing. I didn't think I'd ever be able to use a computer, to be honest. Until a friend said, sit down, here, I've got a spare one, I'm going to show you how to do it. Thank God she did that. God bless you, Alison, for doing that. But so therefore I have to now put the thesis from, you know, from paper to the laptop. So I've got to do that, but it's got to be a lot of editing, I think, while I'm doing that. But I think and next year I should have that finished, all being well.
Awesome. Well, I love you, and I love you. Continue to find her, and Jessica, I'll keep you posted on the publishing, because there's a couple authors out there I know that are self-publishing too, and so maybe what I'd love to do is track somebody that could definitely know that world a lot better. Again, from tragedy to triumph with Jessica Taylor. Everyone, and we're going to post your notes on Tweaking Your Vibrations. Big hugs. Thank you so much. You're welcome, hon. And I will talk to you soon on Facebook.
All right.
Okay, sure. Bye, everybody. Until next week, just remember who you are is more important than anything that you have to wear or identify with out in the world. Who you are. Till next time, till next Wednesday. Lots of love and light. Bye-bye, everybody.